All recordings have begun.
Thank you very much, Kelly. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is a Who Is Call on the 9th of January, 2012. On the call today, we have Rashid Jamak, Michael Young, Susan Prosser, Anne Nastiger, Avidoria, Don Blumenthal, Steve Metallis, Stephen Van Egmond. From staff, we have Barry Cobb, Liz Gaster, and myself, Natalie Peregrine. We have an apology from Paul Brignett. I would like to remind you all to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you.
Okay, thank you very much. First of all, as always, thank you everyone for contributing your time to this working group. It's appreciated, and the community benefits as a whole when people like yourselves contribute your expertise, your time, and your effort. So let's jump right into the agenda and try and use your time efficiently. So agenda bashing, anyone want to add anything to this agenda today? Or remove anything or adjust anything? No? Okay. So why don't we jump to the next item? And, Barry, can we review the action items, of which I know I'm remiss on one because I was struggling with some nasty flu, but please go through the list.
Thank you, Michael. This is Barry. Basically, we had four from our last meeting before the close of 2011. The first one was to send out the requirement survey question assignments. So that was sent out, and people are working on those, and some have submitted. Second action item was for the working group to complete their question assignments per their assigned requirement. That has started. We've had a few submits, and we still have more open, and we'll discuss that a little bit later in the agenda about setting a future deadline, date, and expectations. The third is we sent out a doodle poll for the January 9 meeting, and actually that time frame is what we'll probably stick with for the remainder of the schedule. If there are objections to this new time, we can try to work through it over the next meeting or two and then course correct if needed. And then the last one was assigned to me as well, and that's to compile the first draft of the requirement survey questions. And what you have before you in the Adobe Connect room is the first version of that with the collections of the questions that were submitted. And that pretty much closes out all the action items. I'm sure we'll have some more as we conclude this meeting today. Back to you, Michael.
Okay, great. Anyone want to clarify any of Barry's updates or on the action items, or did we capture everything? Is that correct, according to everyone? Okay, good. So we'll assume that update is fully accurate and current. Barry, do we want to jump right? Sorry, is someone trying to speak? Oh, I guess it's an echo on my side. Barry, do we want to take up the next item then with the response to the GNSO Council? Review the response.
Yes. Thank you, Michael. This is Barry. Basically, before the conclusion of the last year, we sent out the revised response to the GNSO Council with respect to the RAP recommendation for Who Is Access. Didn't receive any additional feedback from the rest of the team, so the original assignment was that we were going to pass it over to the GNSO Council on last week, Friday the 6th. But we wanted to give the team just one more time and talk about it here if there were any other changes that were necessary. The only change from the last draft is actually no change at all. What we were awaiting for was just a response from the compliance team with respect to the WHOIS monitoring tool. And for the most part, they gave it a blessing with the description that we provided, which is basically an extract out of that annual report that they post with respect to the WHOIS monitoring tool, the WMF. Outside of that, everything is pretty much the same, and I just wanted to get the working group's blessing to send it over to the council. I think given the light crowd we have today at the conclusion of this meeting, I'll send out one more final draft to the mailing list, and I'll probably set a target date for Wednesday that we send it to the council. And if there are any other last minute edits, then please provide those over the list. And if anybody has any questions or concerns, speak now, please.
Barry, the only thing I saw in the last draft that I read was a, and I'm trying to remember, it was a typo thing. It was either a missing word or a or an additional word that was kind of out of place. I don't know if that got cleaned up, but I'll take a look at the draft and see whether or not it, it reads clean for that. That was the only thing.
Very good. I should have had this uploaded into the Adobe room. But like I said, I'll send it out on the list for some last-minute call items. And I think the way it's structured now provides pretty conclusive information that the UNSO Council can further make a decision about this and be able to move forward.
All right. So shall we move on to four then, Barry?
Yes. So for the agenda item number four, given our current schedule and our milestone of March 1st to have the first draft of the survey questions completed and passed to the council for their review, wanted to ask the working group if there was a need to have a public meeting for the upcoming Costa Rica meeting in March. We probably ought to make this determination now or sometime this week, as we as ICANN staff have a deadline next Monday to begin submitting time slots if we feel that we need a public session. And so just wanted to throw that out to the working group. If we feel it's necessary, then we'll look to try to find an appropriate time that's, you know, not at O-Dark 30 and not on an earlier day. If not, then imagine probably our only requirement will be to provide an update to the GNSO Council on the Saturday or Sunday sessions, which will probably be the most appropriate. So I'll just throw that out to the working group now.
Barry, can I just ask you a question? Is it typical for, so we submit a draft to the GNSO Council with that same draft after they've looked at it in time for the Costa Rica meeting, I guess, would you typically post that draft as well for public comment, or would you wait till a subsequent draft, or is that within something we still have to decide?
It's at the discretion of the working group. And actually, I see that Liz is online as well, and I'll probably defer to her expertise as to whether we should conduct a public comment period for the draft or not. And then again, it's kind of just, it's really at the discretion of the working group as to whether we want to hold a public session or not.
Okay. Well, so Liz, I'll just give you my thinking, and Don, I'm wondering if we did post it publicly and then had a public meeting, if we could post it publicly before having a public meeting at Costa Rica, it might, Don, help you more efficiently achieve some awareness and support your outreach and feedback efforts.
Good point. Certainly we're hoping to be doing, Don, for the transcript, be doing more of that well before that, but it would give us a chance to solicit more and also maybe do face-to-face with a lot of contacts that I know are going to be usual electronic, and I will, you know.
Right.
Seeing people we're talking to face-to-face gets more information. That's what I'm trying to say.
Right. Okay. Liz, what do you think? Would that be appropriate to do that, to go that route?
Yeah, I think it's really what – I don't recall a specific requirement in the charter. I think what you did commit to just time-wise or target was a draft to the council by them. So it probably somewhat depends on the next item on your agenda, how far along you think you are with the draft questions and whether you would want to include that as a step prior to – council review, you know, as part of your due diligence internally. I think it's, you know, unless it's specified in the charter, which I don't recall that it is, it probably is your discretion how you'd like to collect that input and the timing for that.
Well, I'm a big believer in putting out early drafts of things. On one hand, yes, it sometimes causes so much conversation that it can actually slow things down. But on the other hand, it also can sometimes speed things up because if people have issues or concerns that would make us kind of redirect how we've been doing things, it's better to hear about it earlier. Well, we still have some time in our, in our allocated time to get this entire work zipped up. And the other thing is I think it's very challenging with everybody's activities around the application period to get people's attention to something like this, for Dawn to be able to get people's attention for conversation, and certainly a publicly posted document in the comment area, public comment area, would be a help getting their attention. So, okay. So I take that as we can do it if we want to.
I think the only thing, it's Liz, that I would, mention to you is that we have a formal public comment process that was established as a result of the affirmation of commitments that looks, for official public comment forums that are called for, requires a 30-day period for comments and then a 15-day reply cycle. And this group might prefer something more informal than that. And you could consider reaching out to, for example, the SONAC list, make sure there's community, constituency, and stakeholder group input, because that is once you go that route, there's a more formal and protracted time frame that you'd have to factor into your overall decision making. So, again, entirely up to you, but just something to keep in mind.
But there's no reason we couldn't continue refining questions or adding more questions while that public comment period is open, right?
That's right. That's right.
Okay.
Useful to you, and you may prefer to utilize that mechanism. So.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. It kind of gives us an ongoing feedback mechanism while we're still doing our work, which hopefully would inform us and allow us to speed up. The other thing, Dawn, I'm thinking is, if we've got it posted publicly, maybe if you feel you could spare the time at the Costa Rica meeting, we could do a little bit of a roadshow across the different stakeholder and constituency groups and explain what we're doing.
Sure.
And encourage them to comment on it.
Yeah, I should be able to.
Okay. Liz, if we do that, would you be able to help us try and schedule meetings with all the different groups on Constituency Day or wherever it's appropriate for them?
Yeah,
can help. Barry? Okay, cool.
And so, Michael, this is Barry. So if you went that route, that would be a preference over actually scheduling a specific hour for the schedule of the meetings itself, a dedicated hour. That would be like a public working group session.
I'd like to hear what everyone else thinks, but I'm of the thinking that we would get much more participation and constructive feedback if we could get, 15, 20 minutes in each stakeholders group and just give them a little spiel on what we're doing and ask them to comment on the document. And if we expect them to come to us and happen to notice that public open meeting is one of many, many scheduled events.
I mean, there's some other ways to solicit input that way. I mean, you have representatives in this working group, it's Liz again, who are members of each stakeholder group and constituency to varying degrees of activity, where maybe if you wanted to solicit views, say, in advance of that, you could utilize, I mean, that is a role that many participants intend and want to play anyway in these working groups. So depending on
the
timing, that would be another way to start the input earlier, is just to ask the working group participants to solicit the input from their representative stakeholder groups and constituencies.
Yeah, I think I was assuming to some degree we would do that, Liz,
Yeah, that's. But again, it doesn't hurt to say it.
Yeah, no, thank you for raising that. So we certainly do that, and then I think the roadshow just helps as well. And, you know, if we go, one of our working group members happens to be into a group that we walk through, and Don, I would help you with the do the spiel for sure. But if we've got, you know, one of our members in a particular group, then they can sit and help with the 15-minute kind of presentation. Maybe take a lead of that presentation in that particular group.
I think the other thing, Liz, again, is just that I've noticed that Constituency Day can be packed with issues, and I suspect that many of the stakeholder groups and constituencies go through some prioritization in trying to deal with how they're going to allocate their time then. And so I'm just, we can certainly formalize a request and circulate it, but I just think it's going to be important for each of the constituencies, you know, those of you who are involved there, if you think it's a priority to convey that. There's so much to do on that day. And again, I'm not arguing against it. I think it's a terrific idea. I'm just trying to think of kind of balancing what's likely to be on everyone's plates on those day, that particular day, and utilizing every opportunity we have to get good input.
Yeah, and you're right. There's going to be a lot of stuff flying around, but I guess we have to make a shot at it and do the best that we can. Liz, would it be, so if we hand this off to Gina, so council, at some point will they want us to actually also engage them in conversation and brief them on it?
Typically, there would be, or there could be, depending on the status of working group's work, an update on Saturday or Sunday preceding the ICANN meeting that could get done by the working group chair or by the liaison to the council, who in this case is Wendy Seltzer. I don't know if Wendy's on today.
Right now.
So those would be two options, you know. But I think also, once again, those Saturdays and Sundays are extremely full, and I'm not discouraging us from thinking about a briefing at that time, but I think what's important is conveying, you know, that this is at the stage where it really needs specific council review and that you're looking for something specific rather than just a routine update. There may be more of a priority to making sure that there's ample time on the schedule to take the review that's necessary. So I know we're still kind of at the early stage of drafting the questions, and we're trying to anticipate where we're going to be in a month and a half, which isn't so easy, but I think that's where we'd want to make sure that you do have the time to solicit the council's input and a draft that they can review in advance to give them the opportunity to develop their thoughts beforehand.
Okay, so with that thought in mind, we are absolutely going to have a draft ready well in time. We're 20 questions in now, and it's January 9th, so I think it's doable. Maybe we should just jump to starting to review the questions so we can really ensure I'm telling the truth right now.
And on that note, I'm going to have to drop. right about when the fun starts.
Yeah, good timing, Don. All right.
Right, sorry.
That's okay. So as far as the decision of how we do the public meetings and stuff like that, let's think about everything we've talked about, and let's punt a decision to the next meeting.
Okay. Sounds good.
Okay.
Listen to the recording later.
Michael, this is Barry. I'd just like to remind you, though, if we don't think we're going to need an actual public session, then we're good to go. But if there's a hint that we might need one, we're going to need to submit that as soon as possible.
Barry, I would suggest for now, go ahead and submit one, a request, and I'll help you with that. It's Liz. We can always cancel it later if we find it's unnecessary or redundant. It's a good time, you know, as long as the group is considering that most people will either be there or be available by phone to participate remotely, you know, essentially would be a working group session to solicit feedback, you know, from the broader community if possible. I don't see a problem with moving ahead with just trying to hold a time for now.
Okay.
Thank you.
Liz, would we be able to maybe get the so right now we are for Eastern Standard Time on Monday. Would it be possible to get the same time slot?
It's probably possible, but I'm not sure I'd necessarily recommend it, only because there may be other meetings at that time that many of you might also want to participate or that could draw participation away from this session. Because I think, for example, traditionally on the Monday afternoon, I know there's an abuse of the DNS workshop, and there may be other things that might draw some of you away. So I don't want to rule it out if you think that's the best place to propose a meeting, but you may prefer to have it at a time that doesn't conflict with other activities that your participants may also want to attend or be
participating. Last time, half of our working group participants didn't actually go to the meeting. If it's going to be a similar type of situation, then I'd rather favor the people and keep it to their regular schedule, because we'll prioritize it as a working group meeting first and foremost. Asking people to jump around. I mean, last time I think we had a 7 a.m. meeting that didn't turn out to be a particularly good time for anybody.
I do want to take a poll and see who's planning to be in Costa Rica for starters. Because
let's
that could
that.
Have a
let's
big
figure
impact.
It out.
If they're there, they may be drawn to other meetings, but if they're not there, they may be inclined to, keep to the regular session. Entirely up to you and the team. I just wanted to offer that. Because it's come up.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Barry, do you just want to run a doodle on that?
Yes, I'll take that action. Thank you.
Thanks. Okay, shall we jump to the questions? All right. I guess the best way to do it is have the people that wrote the questions actually, and we'll have to try and interpret Don's because he's not here, but have the people that wrote the questions walk us through them. So, Stephen, I see your name up here.
Okay.
Do you want to start?
Yep. Let me just find my my document with my questions in them. Just a moment.
If you want to log into the Adobe Connect session, it's on the page there, too, if that's easier.
Oh, that'll take way longer than this. Just a moment. I know I said it to you several before. Just a moment. Yeah. Oh, my Mac has let me down. Well, I recall that question one was regarding identifying who had servers numerically. And based on the feedback I've gotten, I just kind of showed it to a couple of people just informally. This needs to be made a bit more, to coin a term, menu-ish, as in like multiple choice, as my original questions are fairly open-ended. Is that your impression?
I think, I'm looking at this thinking the first question is so open that I wonder if we couldn't narrow it down to some more options in the multiple choice and then allow them a comment box as well. I'm just inclined to see if we can't get a little bit more automation in the answers, if possible.
All right.
What does everyone else think?
I agree. This is Susan.
So, Steve, with this question, are you trying to, let me ask what you're trying to get at with it. Are you trying to get at whether or not there's a difference between registry WHOIS requirements and, a regional registry authority's and RIR's needs?
Well, those are the different audiences that we have accessing the WHOIS, right? And this relates, this specific question relates to automatic identification of WHOIS servers, right?
Okay.
So there's a range of use cases that are occasionally needed for that. Sometimes people are using, like, command line WHOIS tools or WHOIS services. other people are using, kind of like supply and libraries, or they just need to roll their own tools.
Okay, so why wouldn't, if that's what you're trying to get at, then maybe we should break this into two or three questions that explain that a little bit better.
All right, I can do so. Can't do it off the top of my head, but I can certainly do so.
Okay.
Michael, this is Steve Metalis. Could I follow up on...
Absolutely. Go ahead, Steve.
I think, because as you point out, that this... let's talk about three categories of entities that operate WHOIS servers. The registrars, the registries. Actually, it talks about registrars, registries, and ccTLDs, gTLD and ccTLD. But we could include RIRs in there. All I'm saying is it might be worth just breaking those out. You know, do you think it would be useful to have such a facility or such a list for registrars? Do you think it would be useful to have it for GTLD registries? Do you think it would be useful to have it for ccTLDs? Do you think it would be useful to have it for RIRs? So then you might get some might be more than others. So it might be useful that way.
Yeah, and one question, Steve, I think would be interesting to get at is, I mean, we've always assumed that, you know, one ring rules them all, to be a little geeky here, but, you know, should we be trying to write one WHOIS service that satisfies all those different customer cases, or is it appropriate for something that's, you know, more specific, maybe a variant of WHOIS that's specific just for the RIRs? You know, I wonder if that's worth asking, or we want to open that can of worms.
That is quite a can of worms.
It is. That's why I'm at, you know, do you think we should ask questions along those lines, right?
We certainly could.
And maybe, Steve, a clarifying question, an opening question saying, is your interest in WHOIS across all these different areas, or are your concerns regarding WHOIS specifically for, you know, as a registrar? Or
that would perhaps argue for perhaps like a section zero, so to speak, in this questionnaire regarding the respondents, kind of like their industry and their focus.
Right.
Right. Indicate if they are a registry or a registrar or an IR or... Who knows, right?
You know what, Steve? I think you got a good point. Maybe we should kind of add an R0, which is kind of just like, respondent baseline questions.
Yeah, this is Steve Metalis. I agree that's a good idea, and sort of for demographic information, and then you can kind of sort it different ways. You might take a look at what was done in the WHOIS survey that was done in 2003 or 2002, where there are a number of categories were listed. You know,
okay.
We have to figure out what are the right categories, but it would be good to know not only what type of respondent we have, but maybe how much they access WHOIS data.
Right. Some of them are going to be consumers of WHOIS data. Some of them are going to be providers. Right.
That's right.
Yeah.
And for the consumers, it might make a difference if they access it once a year, once a month, once a week, daily, 1,000 times a day, et cetera.
Okay. Barry, can we add that as an action item to create some baseline questions for the respondent? And... does anyone want to take that, or any volunteers?
This is Susan. I'll take it.
Great. Thanks, Susan. Appreciate that. Okay. All right, Stephen, we kind of hijacked you a little bit there, but you've gotten...
No, that's a problem.
That's good. Do you want to talk about the next question?
The next focus is, are we moved on to section 8?
I was just looking at question 2. Does anyone have any comments on, you've got two questions there in R1.
Yeah, I split that into two questions.
Yeah. Does anyone have any comments on that?
Do we want to have that, this is Steve Metalitz, when we have this, you know, question about different options, do we want to also leave a space for people to suggest other options?
In all cases, I wanted to get their. There should always be some room for some additional options.
Okay. Again, Steve, is there anything we can do with this question? I guess, you know, it's a technical question. There are going to be some people that don't understand this one that take the survey. And I don't know that there's much we could do about that.
It is a technical questionnaire, right?
It is. So in some cases, in some elements, it's very technical.
But again, we're not administering this question. This is Steve Metalitz. We're not administering this questionnaire just to people with a technical background. I mean, there may be questions they can skip over if they don't understand it or don't want to answer it. You don't have to answer all the questions, but I do think we should be aiming for a broader scope of respondents.
Should we? Okay, so here's an idea. When we have a question that's more technical like this, Steve, what do you think if we have a tick box option that says, I'm skipping this question because, you know, it's technical and I don't have a technical background?
Can I raise my hand?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, this is Aubrey. I don't know that we'd want to be that specific about why someone was not answering a question, because later ones, there might be someone that is technical but doesn't have a policy background.
Okay.
So you may want to come up with, choose not to answer, you know, no opinion, whatever, and leave that as indeterminate as opposed to say, I don't understand.
So rather than have them leave it blank, just have an opt-out box. What if we gave them a few, like opt out, I don't understand, I don't have an opinion?
And this is Anne. I think maybe a non-applicable. I mean, maybe they don't really feel that's applicable to their issues, which is sort of the same as opt out, but I think that, you know, someone might not find it relevant, and that would be interesting information to have.
Yeah, yep. So maybe a, yeah. Steve, do you want to noodle on that a little bit more and suggest a structure we can use on every question?
Sure. Glad to.
Oh, sorry, my name's Steve Metalitz.
No, I'd be happy to. I'm delinquent already in writing the questions, but I'll be glad to suggest something there too.
Great, thanks, Steve. Okay. Barry, you want to drop down to the next questions?
Can I ask, since we've done that, this is Aubrey again, can I ask what I wrote in the comment as a meta question, because what Steve just got volunteered to do or accepted volunteering to do presumes an answer to it. Have we made a decision on what type of question is? As I look down this list, I basically see different types of questions. There's the multiple guess. There's the true and false. I know in the questions I wrote that I submitted too late to make the cutoff, I use a 1 to 5 scale from completely disagree to completely agree. There's different ways to do this. I'm assuming we need to pick one method of framing questions and that we don't want to have each question using a different questioning methodology. So I guess I just wanted to put that on the table, and I wasn't going to bring it up as a loud question, but the question we just got into of how to include a not applicable on this or that made me think that maybe I should throw that on the table. Thanks.
Avery, it's Michael. I think that's part of Wilson's group's guidance as part of how, you know, advising us how to structure the survey.
I see. Okay. Thanks.
Yeah, because one of the things that we asked them to do was, can they help us consider a structure to the questions that would allow us to build some metrics about it, just like you said, you know, scale metrics or something like that, with a particular eye toward whether or not we can grasp some kind of, you know, prioritizations to importance on certain elements or requirements from asking these questions. See if we can get, you know, a prioritization ranking as far as the respondents are concerned.
So this
as
is
well.
So the form we're writing these in now is pretty much irrelevant,
yep,
because that'll change based on what that group comes up with.
Right, right. So the idea would be, you know, get the elements on here that we want to ask questions about. You know, try and refine what we're asking questions about right now, and then have all the authors try and fit them into the, you know, some sample structures that Wilson and his team put together for us.
Okay, sorry for the tangent. Thank you.
Oh, no problem. I think we had this discussion before you got you were actively involved, so that's no problem. Okay. Susan, do you want to walk us through your questions?
Sure. So, admittedly, I had a rather easy one, I think, because mine were pretty easy to line item in a yes or no format. But basically, I had to, or I'm querying if the survey recipients would ever want to search through a WHOIS record for something other than by their domain name. And so I just took the requirements on standard WHOIS servers, the data points and data elements contained within them, and did a yes, no on those. I don't know if we need to go to every single line item in all the various WHOIS server formats, but I threw them all out there for now just because that's what's available. But my idea was if they said yes, then it would display all the options available. And if they said no, it would go nowhere and then just go on to the next question, because not everybody is going to need or want to search within a WHOIS record. But when I made a comment in my questions, because if we do this and we allow them to search within a record, the whoever they're searching it through, the registry or registrar, is going to have to be able to produce the report in a multiple format stage. And I know registrars will balk at this. Knowing the registrars that I do, they will not be interested in doing something along these lines. So I wasn't sure to what degree we needed to go down this road, or if we needed to throw that out there ahead of time, or what?
I mean, I like asking about all these data elements, but I think we need to in order to not corner somebody into, because sometimes it's a yes with a but, or it's a no with a but, or people will start to go, oh, how does this step on privacy law and stuff like that. So what if we did a yes and a no, and then you can also tick in combination, have a box that says special circumstances, and you can pick a yes with special circumstances or a no with special circumstances, or maybe we have a yes, no, and a yes, special circumstances, no special circumstances, and then give them comment bar at the bottom to elaborate on your special circumstances.
Yeah, I've been trying to gear away from free form input boxes because they'll be hard to decipher when they get the surveys back.
Yeah,
I understand what you're saying. I'm just not how to get around it.
Yeah, and you know, to be honest, as being a technical person by nature and by trade, I like definitive yes/no answers, but binary, you know.
I'm with you.
Yeah, but not the other. But I've been told by many people that do a lot of survey work as part of their, a lot of marketers that do a lot of survey work as part of their trade, that they you know, unless they're trying to guide the results of the survey, that, you know, you should include a comment, an optional comment box at the end of questions. And so we're not trying to guide any answers here, so I wonder if you know, I'll ask this to the group, should we be pretty much planning to have some type of comment box at the bottom of every question, and realize that we may not be able to, you know, develop a metric around those comments or effectively even necessarily process all of them, but at least we can look for ones that really point out something that was not considered and try and highlight those in our report eventually at the end of all of this.
That would be work for me, yeah. I realize people usually have asterisks whenever they answer any question. I do myself, so I understand the need. I was just trying to somehow work around it. And
yeah,
the fact that
the
inputs, because there's not a standard form on the input, you know, addresses and phone numbers and things like that, make it very difficult to do searches throughout and get accurate results. So some of that kind of stuff needs to be either considered or have a disclaimer on it. Maybe a yes, no with comments or with input as to what they need, maybe the better way of going.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the things I'm thinking about how we process those comment boxes at the end of it is maybe just try and sort the comments into some categories, like, you know, and present that as part of the report for anyone to read the comments if they want to, and not have us necessarily as a group try and interpret the comments specifically, maybe a category of the comments we would. So, you know, some of those categories on my mind could be, you know, clarification. So we go through the comments and we try and sort out all the ones that are just asking, looking for clarification on something that's already been, you know, mentioned or discussed in regards to the survey information. Another category of issues already raised, flagged, or discussed, right? And then another category of we've never heard of this before. This is a brand new issue, right, or a brand new concept.
Right.
And then when we publish a final report, we can maybe the ones that we actually as a group make some comments back on, you know, maybe a couple of us could go through with the clarification ones, and if they're comments that the clarifications are stuff towards us, then we can answer the clarifications. If they're to someone else around who is in the industry, we could post them, you know, and give an indication that these are common confusions or questions that people are asking.
Right. So taking that in consideration, I would probably amend this survey on the questions a little bit and remind them, because I think there's probably, being in the company that I am, I understand where people's search priorities are, and you could offer them like four or five of the top search priorities, like registrant, and registrar, or some specific elements, and just leave it as a contact name, contact address, and see if any of those kind of bubble up to the surface as being the priority input devices that they want to have to be able to search through. So that would help define on the who is server side, the actual data server side, what needs to be put together.
So would we try and combine this all in a single question, or would we, you know, do a subsequent question and said, okay, now you said which ones of these you look up. You've had a special circumstances comment book. Now, here's another question that says, pick the top five and prioritize them. Is that what you're saying?
No, I would just say, I think you, and I apologize if I misunderstood this, but we do not need to line item every one of these inputs or data elements. I think we could probably just do a yes, no. And if it's a yes, okay, are you interested in dates? Are you interested in contact names? Are you interested in contact email addresses or contact phone numbers?
I got it. Okay,
A little bit slim with it. We can kind of get an idea of what they really want to search through, because they may not care about dates at all. So why put the hassle and requirement on the who is servers to have to actually implement that? It's kind of where my head was at. when I was doing this.
Okay. Well, we can certainly ask the questions.
And this is Anne. Michael, I was thinking the same thing that you just raised, kind of in response to trying to figure out exactly how we were going to reword this, but I do think it would be worthwhile to have another question, and maybe it will pop up. Susan, if it does, I'm sorry if it pops up next, but I do think it would make sense to say, okay, now you've identified these things, prioritize them. Because I do think that would be helpful information. What do we really want to push to that, you know, if there's a consensus around that we want to be able to search by date or by name, then I think it would be helpful to have that information.
Well, maybe going back to what Aubrey was suggesting, having the scale. If we give you five, rate them 1 to 5.
Yep.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
I think that makes sense.
And then I see Barry just scroll down. Once you put this in there, the next question begs to comes up whenever you do searches, if you need includes and excludes, joins and things like that. Do we need to go to that level of question on the survey, or is that something we need to deal with after we know the answer to that above? Then we can figure out from the next stage of this process with the system, if we can be able to offer those parameters. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. I like this question. What's actually going through my head is, again, there's a lot of newcomers. I think we can expect at the next meeting and jumping into the ICANN space now with the new registries coming along, or at least the new registry applications coming along. So I'm looking at stuff that I've known these terms as long as I can possibly remember, but will other people understand them by default? So I'm wondering if we shouldn't star things like non-ASCII, wildcard, search parameter, and have definitions and footnotes for all that kind of stuff.
Or use non-technical terms?
I think include and exclude search parameter options. Yeah, I think for something like that line, I don't see any other way, any less technical way to ask it. But maybe but it's not so technical that you couldn't, with a little definition, you couldn't maybe explain it.
Right.
So do we do explanations where we have things like that are so a bit technical, but not so far gone you couldn't explain it to the non-technical, that we star those? And we, at the bottom of the question, we put a footnote that explains, gives a definition.
Or we can give an example, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, wild card. What's a wild card, right?
Yeah, I know. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, we're all very used to this stuff. It's like breathing for us, but yeah.
This is Steve Metalitz, if I can get in the queue.
Yeah, I think you're the only one, Steve, so go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, just two thoughts, really. One is kind of a placeholder. I think we have a question that comes earlier than this one, or maybe it's later than this one, asks people if they think there are other data elements that should be collected and who is, and made available and who is. So it may be that they want to be able to search on those elements too. So there needs to be some way to incorporate that, if whether it's in this question or in the other question. I guess it's R6B. So it's a later question, but one place or the other, they need to be able to say, I think you should include this other data element, and I'd like to be able to search on it. The second thing is, again, I'm thinking back to the experience of the 2002 survey. We did have open-ended questions there, and ability for people to comment in prose, and it was very time consuming to go through all those and try to categorize them, as you said, Michael. I remember many hours of us doing this. Now, partly that's a question of how many responses we expect to get, which is another interesting question that we should probably talk about at some point, but I think and I understand that you want to, people will probably rebel, perhaps, if there's no ability to add some type of free-form comment. But I think we should really try to minimize that if we can, especially if we are expecting to get thousands of responses, which we had in 2002. I think it would be someone, I don't know who, someone would be spending a great deal of time going through those and putting them in different categories.
So, Steve, I agree with you 100%. On both counts, I think we're on a bit of a knife edge here. I don't think we can take away comment boxes because, like you said, that upsets people. On the other hand, it's a huge effort to process it. So can we narrow it a bit somehow? I'm going to suggest that we all think about that. I mean, I know a number of people that work heavily with surveys, and I know some of you do. Why don't we put that as an action item to for us to all go away, think about that, talk with other people, see if we can come up with some ideas on how to find a balance, and bring that back as a discussion point in the next meeting. See if anyone comes back and has discovered any brilliant ideas.
I think that's a good idea.
So, Barry, you could add that to our action list. That's for everybody to go away and ponder and see if they can brainstorm or refer to other resources or other, see if someone else is brilliant and has solved this problem.
Got it.
Okay. Now you have me all apprehensive, Steve, about we're just trying to get the survey out the door, and now I'm already starting to worry about how we're going to process it. Ugh. Okay. Any other comments on this question? Should we go on to the next ones? Okay, Barry, shall we slide on down? Okay. Avery, these are yours.
I thought I hadn't made the cut, so I was free from having to talk about them.
no such luck.
And I had just really gotten started. And as I say, I had figured, I had looked at it on a scale of 1 to 5, you know, and then basically a set of statements, each of which would have, you know, the scale... disagree completely, agree completely, and I think adding the sixth one that is either not applicable or no opinion or whatever is a good idea. So then I went through and was taking my first guess at some of these. I think I need to do more work on it, but was looking at statements, oriented around statements. In order to improve the Who is Service capabilities, we need this. We need this. We need that. And getting the views on that particular issue, I don't know the need. And then on 6B, I had just really gotten started on it when, you know, I said, gee, if I have any chance at all, I better send this in. So that's the approach I was taking, but I really need to go a little further, I think, even on the first one. So I looked at, you know, is a formal definition needed? If there is a formal definition, should it be done in a modeling language? Should it be done by ICANN? Should it be done by IETF? But not asking a question, making a declarative statement. You know, should ensure that data is entered in a defined manner. Should allow for some fields to be made mandatory. Should require that all fields be made mandatory. You know, and then on the 6B, current one-size-fits-all model for who is sufficient for today's is sufficient for tomorrow's needs. Should be possible
right.
to include other forms of contact. It is appropriate to include social media as a method of contact. So so I was going through the two of those, looking for declarative statements that one might make based on 6A, 6B, or at least that's the approach I was taking.
I like this because you know, it allows you to. I mean, in you know, a set of these, you could put out statements that argue against each other if you wanted to, right? So it's really great. You could have six or seven items in a question like this, and two could be the opposite of five, and it gives people their chance to align themselves with an assertion, right?
Yeah.
It's good. It's good because we can also, you know, it gives us automation in qualifying some of the data. The only risk in a question like this is, did we miss an assertion, an important assertion, right?
And part of that comes out of testing the question is one of the steps that, you know, was talked about, and perhaps this is one of the other subgroups, is you test the set and you test the coherency of the question and so on. And that's when, you know, you make sure that you haven't left things out. But, yes.
Yeah, and that's why we had planned to have some consulting help with having a review of our survey, and also we wanted to use, ideally, maybe some council members or even the council to as a you know, a beta test before we release the survey, and get their feedback on as you said, Aubrey, how comprehensive the questions are. Are we missing something? Was something hard to understand? So forth. The other thing that goes through my head is, again, I'm thinking about how hard it would be for certain people to answer a question like this. Like, you know, so 6A, when I look at this, you know, some of these, some people have no idea what the ITF is, right? And therefore, why should a model include it? You know, some people have no clue what a modeling language really is, but they'll be interested in other questions in the survey. So I almost think, have you ever seen on how-to websites where you go and you look up home renovation stuff or fixing your car or something? They'll often have a scale of 1 to 10 on easy to do yourself, degree of difficulty in 8. And, you know, I'm sitting there looking at these thinking, you know, I'm almost tempted to rank the questions on how technical they are, right, in order to answer them. But I guess we also don't want to prejudice the questions by doing something like that.
Yeah, and I think that if you add the consideration we had earlier of, you know, either the not applicable or just no answer, and you have the other section that you talked about where people define themselves, then you have the ability to say, aha, question 6A, you know, the people that define themselves as a lawyer and non-technical did not answer. And so that gives the people that are doing the metrics, if you both have a this is how I characterize myself section and did not answer, then you know, the people that are playing the statistical survey analysis on it, you know, obviously
yeah.
It's not going to get to a NORC-style thing, but the people that are doing that could sort of say, for this population, we see that the tendency is this, with a standard deviation of that and a variance of the other. We see that for this population, there were certain areas that did not, you know, they didn't see as applicable or did not feel competent to answer, and so on. So, you know, you give yourself a chance to, especially with many questions, you give yourself a chance to do a bit of survey analysis on the data, automated
right.
analysis on the data.
Yeah. No, it makes sense. It's good. I see Steve Mentale's hand up, virtual hand up.
Yeah, thank you. Just a couple of comments. I think we definitely should consider this, you know, 1 to 5 agree, disagree system, but we do then have to be prepared for the fact, and I think people will tell you this is a fact. You're going to get a certain percentage of people who will, you know, say, if your question is the sky is blue and they strongly agree, and your next point is the sky is orange, they will also strongly agree. So I think this is just inherent in... It doesn't always resolve all the contradictions. That's just human nature, I guess. But the other thing is, again, I think we need to be very careful about technical language here and make sure to unpack exactly what we mean to say. One size fits all could mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. And in particular, the questions about work on the model should be done by ICANN or work on the model should include the IETF, I thought we were focused here more on trying to figure out what are the requirements for this service and what is the people who use the service or who provide the service think ought to be included or not included in it, and the question of who develops some of the models that are needed to support that, I think that's a separate question. I'm not sure we should have that in this survey. We should be focused more on what capabilities or what functionality do you need or not need, or can you provide or not provide, and leave aside the question of what should be done by ICANN, what should be done by the IETF, and so forth. I'm just not sure that that's that would be very useful in this survey.
Yeah, go ahead, Aubrey.
Okay. Yeah, I think you may be right, and I think that perhaps the question is and what I didn't think through when I was writing it, and certainly, you know, the idea about writing 10 questions and break out some, is what I was looking at is, especially when we're talking about a structured data model, which is sort of a different question than what the capabilities are, is this a policy-oriented model? Is this a technically-oriented model? But yeah. The other thing that I was thinking of in terms of the first part of your question is I'm wondering in terms of, again, this is probably a problem for the how-to-do-the-question people, is if this is an online questionnaire, is there a value in doing it in such a way that you put your mouse over a word and up pops something that gives you a little bit more information, defines the word, defines the concept, whatever, so that the people that are doing it do have the definitions available without having to go elsewhere? I know it makes doing the survey perhaps slightly harder, more expensive, what have you, but then it also does make sure that when somebody looks at one size fits all and or whatever words we put in there, they know what's being said.
I think that'd be great if we can get that done. Barry, is that something you can list as an action item for Wilson? I'm sure he'll look at them after, even though he's not on this call, and see if he can look at the tools and see if they can support that.
Yes, will do.
Okay. And while you guys were talking, an idea popped into my head on the comments. One way to help clean them up a little bit, or help us process them rather. What if we predetermined our categorization for the comments and asked people filling out the comment box to self-categorize? That would save us some effort.
You mean in Steve? Words? In self-categorized?
Yeah, you.
I'm an itinerant researcher.
Sorry, go ahead. We're both talking at the same time. Go ahead.
In other words, to self-describe themselves, for example, I would write down, I'm an itinerant researcher.
No, I'm saying, so remember we talked about sorting the comments into, like, clarification comment, new issue, right? We could have a row of options underneath the comment box that allows them to tick off one of them.
Yeah, that might be worth, this is Steve Metallis, that might be worth trying, and it might simplify, but the problem is, you know, their characterization might not really be accurate, and you might end up reading a lot of other things anyway, or else missing a lot of things, but I think it certainly would be worth trying that to see whether that helps make it more manageable.
Well, and at the very least, I think if we take that approach and we do miss something because of it, we can say, look, I mean, we did our best. We gave you the opportunity to self-declare how you want us to look at it. You know, we made every effort, but, you know, we can't. You put it into the wrong category, so if we misunderstood it, sorry. Right? I want people to – I think I'd like people – I mean, I think we all like people to come away feeling we did our very best to listen to what they had to say within reason.
Right.
Okay. Steve, your virtual hand is still up. I don't know if you want
to. No, I'm sorry. You could take it down. I'm sorry. I forgot to do that.
That's okay.
I'll do more cleanup work on these points over the weekend, taking into account things that Steve said, et cetera.
All right. Great. Shall we go on to the next one? Is this Stephen Van Egmond's, I think?
R81?
Yeah. Okay. Stephen, are you running out of time, you mentioned?
Shortly, but I can probably get this done in the meantime.
Okay, great.
My questions focus on the need for elevated access to WHOIS data. So rather than only seeing public data or dealing with rate limits that are available to the public, these questions are designed to elicit use cases where someone has the right to exceed those limits or to exceed typical anonymous access. So we ask for the use case, if they have a use case for lawful elevated access, if those access rights are circumscribed in any way, as in either only in response to a court order or if it's part of their regular work day-to-day work, and whether it's constrained to a certain set of TLDs or if it's across all TLDs. And in the case where it's a computer system that has this elevated access, if there are any preferred mechanisms for providing that access, that elevated access, either through cryptography, username password credentials, special systems set aside, and so forth.
Okay. Stephen, I'm thinking on three there. Maybe it would be good to, in brackets, give a little example like you just gave to us to help the comprehension of that particular question.
Sure.
Yeah.
This is Steve Metallitz. I had a little trouble understanding this also. And in some cases, when you say elevated access, it sounds like you're saying more than the status quo. But I thought the idea here was not to say, do you like the status quo? Do you think that, it was to say, what should be the requirements? And so I suppose one way to look at that is to say, do you think anybody should be able to have access to all the WHOIS data? Or do you think there is some subset to which not everybody should have access or only authenticated people should have access? So, I think that we want to kind of capture the whole range, don't we, of elevated access or diminished access or whatever compared to the status quo, which is unauthenticated access in the GTLD space anyway. It is unauthenticated access to a defined set of data elements.
Right.
So I'm just thinking maybe the approach should be, instead of saying more than that or less than that, you should be, first of all, if we are going to take the more than that, less than that approach, we need to define what the status quo is. But maybe we should say, authentication or access even if you're not authenticated. And then would it be?
Right. And question one does aim to identify if they have access, if they have the right to elevated access rights. I can't
elevated compared to what is the question?
The public.
Okay, so that means we're back to having to try and define the status quo, though, right?
Yeah.
Should we try and define the status quo and then ask this question?
The status quo is pretty easy to define. I mean, you can look at it in, it's in the affirmation of commitments. It's in the WHOIS review team report. So you could do that and then say, do you think there should be more or less? But another way to do it would be to say, do you think people should have to identify themselves and have their identity authenticated before they gain access to some or all of the data? You'd have to sort of unpack that, but I think that's really what this requirement is driving at, isn't it? Anonymous access, verification of identities using a range of authentication methods and credential services. So anonymous access is at one end, and then authenticated access would be the other side of the spectrum, and what methods should be used and what should there be credentialing. I mean, I think those are kind of the options that this requirement suggests.
Yeah, Steve, it's Michael speaking. I agree with you in that regard. So, Stephen Van Eggman, I think to kind of expand a little bit on what Steve's saying with some examples. So even there's a question with rate limiting on, you know, upcoming rate limiting challenge with IPv6 addresses, whether or not even anonymous access should require user credentials. So, for example, today I don't need any user credentials to do a Whois lookup, but maybe in the future I need to go sign up for an anonymized user ID or credential, and then I can do my Whois lookup, and that's to allow Whois rate limiting services to track sources, right, instead of depending on IP addresses. You know, that'd be an example.
Yep.
So if we could expand these questions to a bit wider of a scope to cover both the positive and the negative sides of it.
All right.
Okay.
Noted. Thank you.
Anyone else have comments on these questions? Okay. All right. So I think we're done with those ones. So, Stephen, if you had to run.
I do. Thank you.
Thank you for your work and your help.
No problem.
Okay. I'm just looking at Don's stuff here now. Don's not here. Do we just have Don's questions left, Barry?
Yes, these are the last ones.
Okay, and so what have we? Can you just scan down the page to see what we've got left here, really quickly? And that's it for today.
Correct.
Okay. You know what? We're at 5:15. We scheduled 90 minutes. I'm going to suggest what we do is we bounce these ones to the next meeting, so that Don can walk us through what he was thinking. If everyone's okay. Okay. All right. So, hearing Steve's support and no objections, I'm going to suggest we do that. And Barry, that means we'll close off number five and open up new business. And see if anyone's got any new business they'd like to add. Okay. Hearing nothing, I'm going to kind of jump to seven and start kind of talking about what we have on board for the next meeting. Some of us, like myself, owe some questions. So I expect that we'll have Don stuff plus some more submissions. I think the existing questions have had comments back, so I guess we'll expect some revisements from people by the next meeting on their questions. If they could do that, that would be great. If anyone doesn't think they can do that, please let me know now. Okay, hearing nothing, I'll assume that you can get your revisements done by the next meeting. I will get my questions done. Don will have his to go through. And that should give us a full meeting again of work to do 2 weeks from now. Are there any other action items that people want to we'll get Barry to go through them actually first, and then I'll ask that question. Barry, can you list off everything you've got?
Yes. I've got the first two. The first one is dealing with logistics for the Costa Rica meeting. We're going to go ahead and get a placeholder for a time slot. Try first preference on Monday at our normal meeting time and see what happens from there. We'll also look to reach out with some of the SOs and the ACs for a possible roadshow if we decide not to do the public comment period. Second action item is complete, and I just sent out a poll to determine if the working group will be attending Costa Rica or not. Third action item is to Susan, and I believe if I captured this correctly, is to capture a survey respondent profile. Is that a fair statement?
That's what I understood it to be.
Okay, great. Fourth is a carryover from our previous action item list, and this is for the working group assignments for each requirement. And Michael, you kind of said by next meeting, what do you think would be a fair date that I can send out across the list in which to have new or requirements yet to be filled out complete, as well as those that will be edited between now and then? As you mentioned, the 23rd is our next meeting. Shall I post maybe the 18th next Wednesday as a deadline to have the next version or new version submitted, and that'll give me time to fold them into our next draft?
Yeah, Barry, I think that that's reasonable. And I think some of us will get in on time, and unfortunately you'll always have one or two stragglers. So if that's the case and someone is straggling but does have questions done in time, I would ask them to at least post them to the list prior to the meeting, and we may not get them on Adobe Connect, but at least if everyone circulated them, we can still try and go through them in a worst case. But it is very nice if you can get them through Barry in time for him to have them up on the Adobe Connect all consolidated like this.
Great. Thank you. The next action item is mine, and that's just to compile the next version of the survey question draft. Sixth action item is for the entire working group, and that's to search, collaborate, or brainstorm for ideas on how to best handle comments within a survey. Seventh action item is for Wilson, and this is to determine if the online survey tool will have the ability for either pop-up comments or links to more detailed information that will allow the respondent to gain further details around technical requirements or some of the less explanatory phrases that are used in the survey question.
Okay. The other thing I was going to say, can we add to Wilson's task list if he could give us guidance possibly by the next meeting or come to the next meeting with a suggested framework for the questions? The sooner we get into a more consistent mechanism of structuring them, probably the easier it is for all of us.
Will do. I've got that added here.
Thank you, Barry.
Okay, so that's all for the action items. And the only other thing I'll conclude with, as I mentioned, the next meeting will be on the 23rd of January, same time as this. And as a friendly reminder, there's only 3 meetings scheduled until the 1 March deadline to have the draft to the council.
Right. So, on that note, I'll ask everyone to really make these count. I think we got a lot of work done today, so that was good. At this rate, I think we'll make having a decent draft, and we will note it's a draft only, but we should have a decent draft. And that's another good reason, Barry, why we should get into the new format by next meeting for the questions. The other, this is kind of a question for you, Barry, but to be answered to the group, is do you have a preferred way of us marking up revised questions? Do you want us to send you the entire list of, if I do one set of questions, I revise them, but I only change 3 out of 10 questions, do you want me to give you the whole list again with a new date on the file so that it's easy for you just to cut and paste it in again, or how do you prefer?
Just like you said, I'll cut and paste. Please provide the entire next version of your questions, and I'll just cut and paste that entire chunk into this master copy.
Perfect. Okay. Great. Thank you. Okay, did we miss any action items? Does anyone want to add anything? Okay, hearing nothing, I'm going to thank everyone for their effort and their clever thinking, and I feel like we got a lot of good thoughts on the table today, and we're making progress. Thank you, everyone, and have a very good day.
Thank you.